Thank you to the members of the Prairie Choir, and good morning. And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Melinda Gustafson-Gervasi. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age or your abilities or inabilities. Later in the service, we will invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better and to talk with you over coffee afterwards. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are presented by either a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, or our minister, Reverend Sandy Ingram. Today, I, a member, will be presenting. At this time, I would like to invite member Rose Marie Lester to help with the reading for our chalice.
Well, in honor of the International Spirit of United Nations Day, you're going to hear something very unusual in Catalan, and thanks to Google, I learned to pronounce it. Ensenem a quest calce en memoria de Miquel Servet, que va morir al octubre fa mes de 406 anis, defensant el seu dret de pensar y creure de manera independent. El va dir tant de bo que tots poguessin parlar lliurement en les nostres esglésies. I així reconeixem en la lliure expressió del pensament i en la diversitat d'opinions la base de la nostra fe liberal. And in English, this is, we light this chalice in remembrance of our forebear, Michael Servetus, who died in the month of October, more than 460 years ago, defending his right to think and to live independently. He said, "I wish that everybody was freely allowed to speak in our churches. And so we recognize in the free expression of thought and the diversity of opinions, which is the basis of our liberal faith."
I have to go off script a little bit here because it tells me that I should now introduce the speaker. But I am the speaker for those of you. My husband and children and I have been coming here. I was trying to think about it. I think it's been off again, on again since about April, May of 2011. We have young children that are 6 and 4, and so because of illnesses, we tend to be somewhat sporadic in attendance, but I'm happy to be here today. The program committee had reached out to me when they were looking for a speaker, and I thought the timing couldn't be better to talk about a little project that I had done that I call Middle Class Philanthropist, How Anyone Can Leave a Legacy. So if we have the technology working here, I think they're just trying to plug in the remote, otherwise we can just maybe go through in advance if we want to move it. If you guys just want to move it up, I can just point.
Yeah.
Here, let me help out one side.
Let's close this.
No, it's not working. But we can just, someone wants to sit there, I'll just not. We can improvise. So we can go to the first slide. You can just hit page down. So, this is good. The who, the what, and the why. A little bit more about me. I have to stay by this microphone, which is connected to the podium. The who, the what, and the why. For those of you who know me, I'm a UU, and I'm a mom, but I'm also an attorney. I do estate planning and probate here in the area, and so that means I spend my professional day talking about illness, death, and taxes, some rather depressing topics at times, especially the reasons that bring people in to talk to me. And I also enjoy writing. I've always done a little blog related to my practice, as well as one on frugal living, and I decided that I wanted to counterbalance some of the emotional weight of my office by doing some writing projects. And then in the course of my practice, which is in its about 10th year now, I had a stream of clients who would come in and say, "I never had children, what am I gonna do?" Or, "I've outlived my child, what am I gonna do?" Or, my kids have more money than they need, what am I going to do? And many people who were passionate and concerned about causes or nonprofit organizations, and they wanted to do something, but they didn't know what or what it would look like. So I looked for resources. And there are plenty of books on Amazon or the library if you have the money of Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg and you want to create a family foundation. And there are plenty of books if you declare yourself middle class and you want to donate $25 a month or take a volunteer vacation. But there really didn't seem to be anything to meet my clients' needs about what do you want to do as an end-of-life gift if you declare yourself middle class. So I decided I'd write one. And going through the writing process, towards the end I found this quote by Toni Morrison, if there's a book you really want to read, but it hasn't been written yet, then you must write it. That really helped me get through the proofing, because I will never, ever write another book with footnotes. That was really. So we can go ahead to the next page. Page down. National Philanthropy Day. I threw a few more things into this than my normal presentation. We are approaching National Philanthropy Day. November 15th, it was created in 1986 by then President Reagan. It's an official day as well as a grassroots movement, both to about the need to give and how to be effective. So when I released my book last year, it was around this time, and I tied it into National Philanthropy Day. And there's always this big, lovely celebration at the Overture Center. And it kind of grates me the wrong way, because I have client after client in my office week after week who I think is a philanthropist. And the people who are in this book who are a philanthropist, but they don't really fit that definition that we kind of see down at the Overture. Not that it's not welcomed, but there is more depth and breadth to that word than I think a lot of the press and media give it. We can go ahead. You use in philanthropy, I threw this in for us, so we tie this into principles. Number one, the inherent worth and dignity of everyone. Anyone can leave a legacy, even a person who's on medical assistance. And if you're receiving medical assistance and you're single, it means you don't have more than $2,000 of assets to your name. But you can be a philanthropist, and we'll talk more about how you can do that. There's the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, as we've been talking about. UUs are a very dedicated and passionate group of people who show up weekly at justice, social justice events, and there's no reason for your presence to stop when your earthly time comes to an end. And then the interdependent web of existence we're all a part of, and just acknowledging that we are all that. It's not just the Mark Zuckerbergs and the Oprah Winfreys of this world who can be a philanthropist. Page down. Philanthropy defined. Now I'm going to read a little bit from the book. Because philanthropy, a lot of times people hear that word and they think of gated estates and attorneys with massive trust documents and the faces of Oprah and Mark Zuckerberg. That's the creator of Facebook. We don't know it. He was the face of philanthropy last year, which really kind of bothered me. But when you look at the word in a historical context, predating democracy, capitalism, organized religion, and as old as humanity itself, philanthropy exists because things often go wrong and things can always be better. Defined, philanthropy is a noun meaning generous help or benevolence toward one's fellow man. Philanthropy is further defined as an effort or inclination to increase the well-being of humankind by charitable aid or donations. Primarily achieved through gifts of time and money to nonprofit organizations, philanthropic actions range from participating in a park cleanup day, purchasing raffle tickets for a local nonprofit contest, making an annual gift to your college alumni foundation, or naming a place of worship in your will. I wrote that before they asked me to speak. Nothing about these actions requires excessive amount of money. Philanthropy only requires a desire to improve your world, not a seven-figure net worth. Yet this is not the message readily shared in today's media. And so with the book, you can go ahead to the next slide, my goal was sort of twofold. One is to educate the average and everyday person. You can make a difference. The other is to challenge nonprofit development staff, the people who do fundraising for nonprofits, about who they consider to be a philanthropist. A lot of times I see them kind of courting the exact same group of people in town, and I think they're overlooking the people who might give their time every week and not recognize that when one gives their time, they're very devoted and passionate about an organization, because time is often our most precious commodity. And I'm going to share from you one story. This was the only story that I actually found via Google. Everything else was word of mouth. And that's because stories like this just don't get a lot of attention. I know from being an attorney and seeing the documents written and executed that gifts like this do happen, but they're not picked up very much by the media. In Gail Sheffield's case, she had some very vocal and strong advocate friends who wanted her story shared, and that's how I was able to find it. So I will read part of her story from the book. Gail Sheffield's four-page handwritten will left her entire estate to two organizations where she had been highly involved during her life. Following her death after a short illness, those bequests are still making a huge difference in the world of feral cats. In her will, Ms. Sheffield left her home to the Flathead Spay and Neuter Task Force, a one-of-a-kind organization in Montana. According to the organization's director, Mimi Beatles, the organization sold the home and received $290,000, an amount equivalent to 3 years of revenue. As a result of the bequest, the burden of fundraising has been lessened. The bequest ensures the financial stability of the organization for years to come. Moreover, according to Ms. Beatles, the rainy day fund that was created from the bequest allows volunteers to focus on grueling work of capturing, treating, and releasing feral cats. Gail Sheffield's gift of her home amplified efforts in the field, allowing her true mission of the organization to thrive. In her honor, the building that houses Flathead Spay and Neuter Task Force has been renamed the Gail Sheffield Memorial Clinic. Gail's will also left a bequest to another nonprofit of a similar mission. Her will left $100,000 to the Feral Cat Consortium of Madisonville, Louisiana, a dollar amount that represents about 3 years of its annual operating expenses. A portion of the bequest is being used to trap and release feral cats in New Orleans area, continuing Gail's own efforts as a volunteer in the field. She'd gone there herself to do work. An all-volunteer organization, its director, Wendy Guitry, emphasized that the gift was far more than an infusion of cash. Quote, it was a concrete, gigantic thank you for thankless work on a seemingly endless problem, unquote. Her gift not only gave the organization operating dollars, but empowered volunteers to be more aggressive in project ideas. It allowed volunteers to work harder because the limitation of no funding was no longer a boundary. I do think that was probably the most powerful quote that I came across in my research. Gail had been widowed. Her husband had passed a few years before her. They'd had no children. She essentially left her house to one organization and her retirement account to another. So again, you know, she chose that that was where her dollars would have the greatest impact. And I think it's a very powerful story for those organizations, and she thought a lot about where to direct that gift. Next slide. The benefits of philanthropy. Immediately you'll hear about taxes, 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 but most middle class folks aren't going to really benefit that much from a taxation standpoint because, one, we're not going to make those gifts during our lifetime. The reason is we don't know how much money we're going to need. And the average cost of a nursing home, a semi-private room in a nursing home in Wisconsin, is $85,000 a year. So people say, I can't give it now, so I'm not going to get an income tax break if I give it now. I don't know how much I'm going to need. And then if they wait until their time comes, the federal estate tax does not kick in unless you have more than this year, $5.34 million. So, again, taxation isn't going to be one of the benefits, I think, driving a lot of this. But again, most of the literature that's out there talks about the tax benefits, and I think it goes right over the heads of most people. But there are a lot more benefits, I think, that come from philanthropy if you drill down a bit more. One is that it's a gift that simply keeps on giving. And I'll share another story from this in the book in a few minutes about the Cronin family. And it's a perfect example about how, with a very small amount of money, or relatively small money, they have created a gift that will keep on giving. Expressing gratitude feels good. In my research, I've looked about happiness. And one of the ways that you can feel happier is to express what you're grateful for. When I have clients come in, this is not a pleasant process. I mean, I'm asking them about what happens if they die and this and that. But when people start thinking about what organization or cause has uplifted them, helped them through a difficult period of time, it can make them feel better about themselves and the process. And just knowing that, yeah, hey, somebody had my back there. I wanna give back. It sets an example for the next generation. By turning grief into something positive. And I always talk about how I have, you know, a 4 and 6 year old, and as a parent of young children, we know we set examples on them, because sometimes a word will slip out of their mouth that you know was one that you said, and that they're modeling your behavior, and you turn bright red. Well, you don't have to have small children to still set, you know, parenting standards, or even with an expanded family. If you choose to leave 5% of your estate, or if you choose to leave 10% of your retirement account to a nonprofit, your 60-year-old child will still benefit from that modeling behavior. And it simply makes the world a better place if we all give. I find this to be a very powerful number. Between 1998 and 2052, a total of $41 trillion, that's trillion with a T, is going to flow from the baby boomers to the next generation. And so, again, I ask, what would our world look like if 5% of that went to worthy causes, 10%? You don't have to leave an entire estate to make a difference. Next slide. So now I'll share with you about the Cronin family, and I will throw in the Cronins. At least Kate is the daughter in the story, and that's how I came about this. They are also, Kate and is a UU here in town. At age 54, Professor Robert F. Cronin was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. He died in 2001 at the age of 61. He left behind a wife, two adult children, and a legacy of being a remarkable professor of rhetoric, mass communications, drama, and photography. He truly cared about the young people he helped educate at Loras College in Dubuque, Iowa. His teaching went beyond the classroom. Students were invited home for dinner. They were encouraged to tackle internships and explore the possibilities of their degrees. In lieu of flowers, the family received numerous donations upon his death and decided to create an endowment in Dr. Cronin's name at Loras College, where he had taught for 23 years. The donations, combined with gifts from his widow Rosemary and other relatives, established the Robert F. Cronin Communication Arts Scholarship. All it took was $15,000 for the Cronin family of Dubuque, Iowa to become philanthropists. Awarded once a year, the $500 scholarship is intended to make a difference in a student's life, whether it's paying for a rent bill, making a car repair, traveling to an interview, or purchasing books for a semester. Would journalists write a front page story about the Cronins? Probably not, but the Cronin family's motivations, actions, and results clearly put them in the camp of philanthropists. I skipped a little bit about how the endowment there works, but sadly, since we worked on this together, Mrs. Cronin passed away on actually August 27th of this year, and it is now the Robert F. and Rosemary Cronin Scholarship. So the families continue to be able to do that, but it's a perfect example of community organizations, colleges that have endowment funds where you can put some money in, and now over time people can contribute to that, and that will continue to kick out a gift in honor of Kate and Kevin's parents and a way for them to, again, process their grief and to turn it into something positive. Next slide. Selecting a cause. I also have a master's in public administration, and so after law school I spent 5 years doing evaluations, and so I had to put that to some use here in the book, and I think it's important because the nonprofit world is not absent of fraud. And so it's very, very important to make sure that you're giving to the organization you think you're giving to and that you're giving to one that you think is worthy of your dollars. Some of my clients will come in and say, you know, I want to do something, but I don't know what. Where do I go? There's so much out there. And so they have to start by figuring out what organization to even consider or organizations. I always encourage them to consider first, where are they currently donating their time and money? And again, I will really emphasize time. We only get 24 hours in a day. No matter if you're Bill Gates or me, you get 24 hours. Where are you putting that time? That's a strong indication to what you value. And then also, where are you making maybe an annual contribution or monthly contribution? Again, look to what was a source of assistance during your lifetime. I always think of my husband's grandmother when I talk about this. She had lived a very long life. She passed away about 2 years ago at age 93. She'd grown up here in the Madison area and had been quite poor as a young child and had benefited from the Empty Stocking Club. We often see that almost this time of year now. And as an adult, when she was more comfortable, she gave back every year to that organization because it had helped bring a little joy to her life, and so she wanted to give back there. So if you're looking for some time to reflect, think about, you know, go back in time, what was there that had helped you? Where is the financial support needed the most? Even if you have an organization, there are multiple funds within an organization. Is there a specific area that you want something devoted to? Do you really love the music at a certain organization? You want to leave to the music fund? Or religious education? Or outreach? Those types of things. Or is there a new effort within an organization that you would want to help spur? There's another story in the book that I won't share, but there was a woman who left one half of her Wisconsin retirement account to an organization here. And they turned that into a capital campaign and leveraged what was about, I think, $100,000 into several million. She was the impetus to get that going. And again, it's just a powerful thing about if you pick the right place, that they needed a capital campaign. You need to evaluate your candidates. And I spend more time in the book about how to do that. A few resources are CharityNavigator.org, the IRS, Very important there. About 2 years ago, the IRS required nonprofits, every single one of them, to submit a form every year to maintain their 501c3 status. Some organizations didn't have an up-to-date address with the IRS. They never got the form, and they have had their status revoked and may not know it. So especially if you are giving a gift and you are thinking you want to have that as a tax deduction in some way, make sure that the IRS is going to agree with you, because whatever they decide will trump. So look at that. GuideStar and Charity Watch are other ones. And the Better Business Bureau, I actually just shared a story there as well. They have something called, I think it's GiveWatch. But the Better Business Bureau does as well, because the whole Ebola outbreak has now spurred fraudulent efforts to help garner support. So whether you're giving to an organization for the first time or you're looking at naming someone in some estate planning documents, I would encourage you to take a few minutes and make sure they're legit. Next slide. And before I talk about this, I do want to throw in one more thing. If you're looking at an organization and it's talking about its cost for administration, do not automatically scratch something off your list if the admin costs are super high. And the reason I would say is a lot of organizations, especially your smaller organizations, are almost entirely volunteer run. So all of their expenses will likely be admin. So you need to make sure you're really drilling into that. And things like that are more what I talk about but don't have time for today. You can't get a lawyer in front of you without talking about accuracy, accuracy, accuracy. We're annoying in that way for a reason, and we learn from horror stories, and this was something that came across in my research out of Ohio. A man had named several organizations in his will and retirement accounts, and one of them he left to the Alzheimer's Research Center, and then he died. And no organization existed with the name Alzheimer's Research Center. So what's a judge to do? Split it three ways. Because three different organizations stepped forward and said, oh, he meant us. Two were organizations he had been involved with during his life, and the other just had all those words in its title. So when I work with clients, I want the complete legal name. Do you know the complete legal name? If people here have heard of Wart Radio, W-R-T, yeah? Do you think that's their name? You guys kind of set that up. No, it's not. It's Back Porch Radio, Inc., and I know that because I have people who name them, and for me not to commit malpractice, I have to look it up. And I look it up every time because organizations change their names. The Gildas Club, the local branch several years ago, floated the idea of changing its name because they felt that not enough people knew who Gildner Radner was. They got a lot of flack, and so they pulled back from that. But as an estate planning attorney, I thought, oh my goodness, think of the wills out there that'll say Gildas Club, and they don't have the phrase or its legal successor organization. Pardon me, organization. I put that in all of my documents, but I can't tell you how many documents I see that don't have it. Or if you're doing things on your own, you don't have to have an attorney to do this, but think about the fact that they might change their name. And I always prefer to make sure you get the EIN number. It's a tax number that the IRS assigns to an organization. Now, some organizations share that, but you might have a national chapter. Take Sierra Club. You've got the national chapter, you've got regional chapters, you've got state chapters, you've got local chapters. Which chapter do you mean? Trust me, nonprofits will fight over that. And they do. So we can slip to the next one. Yeah. I'll skip from reading from the book on this one, but I always basically say, you know, if you want your wishes to happen, if you think, yeah, I'd like to leave something, you have to make it legal. I know a lot of people would rather do that another day, but you have to make it legal. And one of the things I like to do when I talk to nonprofits is flip it. How many times do you listen or see advertisements that say, remember us in your will or trust? And I thought, you know, you just ask someone to spend a couple $1,000s or a couple $100s with an unpleasant process to put you in their will or trust, when there are smaller and easier ways for them to leave a legacy. I think the most powerful is in lieu of flowers. The current story is a good example, and about a year ago, UU World had a very sad story of a young woman who was maybe 19 years old, stabbed by her then boyfriend. She had broken up with him, he couldn't handle it, he stabbed her. In lieu of flowers, donations totaled $150,000. The family used that to set up a family fund and a foundation in a way, and to combat violence among teens, domestic violence in teen dating relationships. So again, it's an example of using that as a process to process some of your pain. The beneficiary of a life insurance. Some people have a life insurance, maybe it just comes along with your job or something you've had out there for a while. You don't need to work with an attorney to go change that form. You just need to go change it. But if you do, you want to make sure you have the legal name on there and you're very clear about it. I'd highly recommend that you keep a copy of the beneficiary form. Do not rely on the organization to keep it. They lose it. I see it so many times where the insurance company, the HR director, oh, sorry, you can't find that beneficiary form. Then that gift won't happen. Beneficiary of a retirement account. If you're tax efficient, some of you know my husband, CJ. He's an engineer. He's efficient both, well, with everything, especially with tax dollars. So I always think of him with this one. If you want to be charitable and you want to be as tax efficient as possible, money that goes out of a traditional IRA, 401k, 403b that goes to a charitable organization that the IRS uses a 501c3 is exempt from the income tax. So if you leave your retirement to your child and they pull it out, which they're going to have to, it'll be subject to their income tax rate. If you leave retirement dollars to a charity, no income tax rate. So it's a very nifty little thing. And again, you don't have to leave the entire thing. You could leave 10%. If you have bank or brokerage accounts, you can put a TOD or POD on them. That stands for transfer on death or pay on death. Again, it's a beneficiary form. You go to your bank or credit union, you fill it out. Some people might have a travel fund. They let it build up, they take a trip, then they build it up, they take a trip. Some people might say, well, when my time comes, whatever remains in there, send it to the library or whatever organization. You can do that by a TOD or POD. I had some clients. Actually, I came up with this idea when my son was born. I was out at garage sales buying stuff, and I came across one that was a sale where all of the proceeds supported breast cancer research. And it was donation only. Everything's going to go to breast cancer research. And so I had some clients that had a mother who'd lived a very long life and had a very large house that she'd never thrown anything out of. And three grown daughters, one here, one on the coast, one abroad. Adults with their own lives and their own full houses. So they took the things that meant something to them, but what were they going to do with the rest of it? They ended up having an estate sale, where they had it well posted that everything from the sale would benefit a nonprofit that the grandchildren were involved with, that the grandmother had always gone to the performances and loved. So it helped them, it helped the estate with a tax deduction, and it was a great way for grandma to be somewhat philanthropic, even though that decision hadn't been made while she was alive. And then last, you know, there's the bequest in the will or a trust. And again, you don't have to leave your entire estate. You could say, I want to leave 5% of whatever's left over. Or I want to leave my photography equipment. You know, maybe no one else cares about photography. I had a client who had a Model T car, and no one else wanted it, so he left it for auction with the proceeds going to an organization he chose to support. Profiling giving, for purposes of time, I'm going to skip this one, but it's called the Sewing Machine Project. It's a local thing here where they gather sewing machines and materials and redistribute them around the world, giving life to machines, helping families clear out houses, and empowering mainly women with a skill or a trade. And so, again, my point and purpose of the book was just to encourage people. I mean, I see a lot of people who are passionate, and you know, when you're not filling your seat or filling your slot in the volunteer schedule because your time has come, you can still be philanthropic. You don't have to be Mark Zuckerberg. And if you work in the nonprofit world, to really reconsider who you might be targeting in terms of people who would be willing to name you in their final paperwork as at least a partial request. So the page does have its, or the book has its own Facebook page. I guess it has to. And I am Purple Owl Press, so I self-publish the book. And I'm always looking for stories. If other people have stories, because I do think that if we can get more talk about this and get it out there, it'll inspire more and more people. And just so you know, the book itself isn't a way to be charitable. A percentage of every sale results in a donation to the Arbor Day Foundation. So, we have time for maybe a few questions, and then we'll be actually on track for time. Because I drink a lot of coffee and talk fast. Sorry if I blew through that too fast. Right. One of the things I recommend is visiting it in person. You know, get their annual report, visit it in person, ask the who, what, where, when. Obviously, that's not possible for some organizations, but if it's not, then maybe you want to look for some place that is. And for today's closing words, and it has convinced me that almost everyone, regardless of income, available time, age, and skills, can do something useful for others and, in the process, strengthen the fabric of our shared humanity. President Bill Clinton, from the introduction to his book, Giving. So now at this time, thank you for coming and being here today. Please extend a hand of friendship to those around you and then join us for coffee and conversation in the main entryway. Thank you.